It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break. But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hey, welcome to Business Breakthrough. We're all about how you can break through the plateaus in your service business and find ways to grow it and scale it and finally get to those levels of personal and financial freedom and success that I know you've been fighting for. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. I heard a quote from Abraham Lincoln. He says, "If I have 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'm going to spend the first four sharpening my axe." Oh, say that again. If I have 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'll spend the first four sharpening my axe. And that actually brought me back to a time where I was studying for the New York bar exam, which, oh my God, it's like Dante's seventh level of hell. And one of the things that really stayed with me is the training from the bar review people, because we would have essays on this bar exam in, you know, constitutional law or contract disputes or something like that. And one of the things that they taught us, they said, you'll have, let's say, an hour to write this essay. And we want you to spend the first 10 to 15 minutes preparing an outline. We want you to spend those first 10 to 15 minutes thinking through what it is you want to say. And why did that make so much sense? Because when you're under pressure and you're under a gun and you're under a deadline and you gotta get it done, if you don't have some sense of that plan, where you're going, you actually end up spinning your wheels and making perhaps more of a mess or getting more confused or not getting to the destination that you want as a result. You just rush into it without saying, what's the plan here? What do we want to get out of it? How are we going to decide whether this has been a success? If you don't ask yourselves those questions to begin with, who knows where you're going to end up? And very often, it's not exactly where you thought you wanted to be. So remember, you got 6 hours to chop down that tree. Spend the first four sharpening your axe. Great wisdom from Abraham Lincoln. You know what else would be really wise? Signing up for the executive summary for our Business Breakthrough podcast, because I know you don't always have time to listen to the whole episode. So we send them out every single week, and if you can't get to the podcast, at least you can read really quickly what we're doing and get the highlights. So go on over to businessexponential.com and get signed up. And now a little bit about our guest, Jean Christensen, and I'm happy to have her on the show today because she not only has the hands-on entrepreneurial experience, but she found a way to use government contracts to really help catapult her family's company from just a handful of employees to over 100. She speaks really passionately about the kind of security and stability that government contracts can provide for a small business. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have her on the show. And not only has she then taken that expertise and coached thousands of business owners around the issue of government contracts, but she also has a particular eye toward minority and women business enterprises as well, and has gotten a lot of community and business recognition for that. Strap yourself in and take notes. Get your pencils out, because she is chock full of information. And we're delighted to have her here on Business Breakthrough. Jean, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Nina. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. So I wanted to hear a little bit about how you first got into this area of government contracting. It's not so common, and particularly not so common for women. So can you give us a snippet about your background and why you're so impassioned about it?
Yeah, sure. I actually started with my parents back in the 1980s. They started a security guard firm. My background was in marketing and business development, and they asked me to come into the company. So one of the first things I did was I started pursuing certifications with the city, state, and federal governments. And, you know, I was really excited about it. And months after we got certification, there were no business coming in. So it was a really painful time for me and my family. And so I started to kind of explore how I could leverage the certification as a minority-owned business, as a woman-owned business, and some of the federal programs that were out there. And in doing so, I was able to bring on a number of government contracts into the company. And that resulted in just life-changing events. We went from, I think, our first contract, we brought on about 100 employees. And you can, as you can imagine, that type of a transition changes the face of the entire company.
That's huge. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like? Because for many businesses who may be thinking of contracting, the fear is you start getting involved in it and say, well, all of a sudden there are crickets in the outfield. So talk a little more about what it is you did to create those relationships and leverage the certification.
Well, the first thing I did is I kind of took a step back. And I, like many other business owners, you hear about the certification and everybody tells you it's a valuable tool, but I never really understood, well, what is the purpose of the certification and how can I use it? So I almost took a clinical approach to step one, understanding the purpose of certification with the individual agencies that I was certified with. What do they use it for? You know, what is the purpose of it? And how could I leverage that certification? The second thing I did was, instead of thinking of my, you know, just waiting for opportunities to come into the business, I started to realize that government agencies in particular have detailed forecasts about when they're going to buy, how they're going to buy, and what they're going to buy. So that was the second thing that we did, started to be strategic and say, you know, if I see that a government agency is going to buy a particular commodity or service a year from now, now I have the opportunity to plan for that. I have the opportunity to study, you know, the procurement landscape so that I can educate myself and my team on things that we need to know as part of the procurement process. I have time to engage in resources that I may need to respond to bids and proposals, such as a proposal writer. And I also was able to talk to our bank to say, you know, here's a strategic growth plan. This is what we're looking at, so that we didn't experience the pain of going from, you know, zero to 100 employees, as what happened to me previously.
Mm-hmm. Right. Doing that overnight. That's, ouch. Like, if you've ever had a teenager who suddenly grew like 4 inches in a summer, that can actually be kind of painful. So I want to hear a little more about what sorts of things the government is looking to buy. I mean, the impression is always they're looking for, you know, strictly blue-collar construction stuff or Department of Defense. I mean, that's what you often, the image that comes up about government contracting. What other things is the government buying, particularly from small businesses and, let's say, businesses doing under $1 million?
Oh, that's a great question, Nina. And so I want to just start out by saying that the government is the largest purchaser of goods and services throughout the world. I'm going to focus a little bit on New York City, for example, where I live and work. And in New York City, the government spends well over 50% of their entire budget on professional services. So that's a great place for small companies to start looking. And professional services could be anything from architects, engineers, trainers, lawyers, healthcare professionals, daycare, florists, you name it, the government is buying it. The secret to success is really kind of, you know, taking a step back and doing the research so that you can find out, okay, daycare, that sounds interesting. What agencies would be buying daycare services? Who would be interested in that? So that you're not wasting time. It's almost like, you know, going into the ocean if you don't really have a sense of, okay, who is buying what I'm selling? But to answer your question directly, the government buys everything. I've worked with clients who make pizza, who make pots and pans. I've worked with the daycare providers, florists, and I work with companies like mine, small professional services companies. The government also buys from them as well.
That's amazing. And, you know, it's funny you think about your analogy, the ocean is somewhat apt, that if you don't know the currents, you can actually get swept along by the tide and it can be kind of dangerous. So what I'm hearing you say is that it's a wonderful opportunity, but you also want to make sure you build in some time to really understand the different agencies, the different process. And my understanding is that it's not that you get certified once and that applies to every form of government. There are a lot of different certification agencies and processes you have to go through. So what are some of the different ones that are out there? I mean, I know you're here in New York City. You know, just give us a quick rundown, federal, state, local, what applies?
So that's a great question also, because the certifications are different depending on who you're targeting. So just to give you kind of some of the global terms that are commonly used throughout the United States, for example, Women Business Enterprise. That's what's called a WBE, and that refers to a business that's owned and controlled by women. It needs to be 51% owned and controlled by women. Women who are U.S. citizens or legal residents, that's also an important consideration. Hmm. And essentially what that certifies is that the business is owned and controlled by women. There's also a certification for minority owned businesses, and that is the same principle, 51% owned and controlled by a single minority or group of minority that control 51% of the company. The federal government has some really great programs for small businesses. They have something called the 8A Business Development Program, which helps small companies gain access to tools, resources, and federal contracts. The federal government also has something called the Women-Owned Small Business Program, which is really targeting women in specific areas, allowing them to participate in something called government set-asides, where contracts can be set aside strictly for a targeted group. So, and then last, I should mention that an organization called the WBENC has a certification for women. It's called the WBE also, and that provides women with access to corporations that are looking to increase their spending with women-owned businesses through supplier diversity programs. So as you can see, there's a number of different ways that you can go with these types of programs.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so if the federal government has a program, I'm assuming the states have a program, local authorities have a program. Do you have to apply to each and every one? Or once you apply to one, that application kind of gets filtered through and passed along and can be used with these other certifying authorities? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So I'll give you the national certifications are available through the WBENC or the National Supplier Development Council. And those are national certifications. So you can use those if you are targeting national corporations. Mm-hmm. Many local government agencies have reciprocal arrangements with state agencies that they will recognize the WBE or the MBE certification that has been obtained through this national entity. They will also recognize it on the state level. My recommendation is always, there's a fee, by the way, for the national certification. So my recommendation to clients is always to kind of start local, because as you can imagine, when you're looking at that ocean, there's just so much that you need to know that what I say to clients is, let's start with, you know, especially smaller companies under $1 million, let's start with our own backyard. What is there? And it could be your local library. It could be, you know, your local schools. What kinds of services are they outsourcing? And then kind of working the certification backwards, kind of figuring out what is the local community outsourcing and what certifications would be best for me to obtain before I start, you know, just applying for certifications everywhere. Because mm-hmm. The process to obtain contracts with the government, it's a process. It takes time. It takes expertise. So you don't want to just say, okay, let me get certified and I'll get a certification that I can use everywhere. It's almost, where can I provide the best value and what agencies or corporations are looking for either the minority certification or the woman certification?
You know, and that's a really great point about being strategic in this, because it is very easy to throw away fees for these kind of certification programs all over the place and then not really working it to best advantage. So you're actually getting a return on that investment. So thanks for that tip. So let's say, okay, I'm a woman-owned business. It's pretty clear. What are these agencies looking for in terms of infrastructure or size of business? You know, what do I need to be in place or have in place to be a viable candidate? Can I be just completely solo? Or do they usually like to see a certain number of employees? What kind of business infrastructure makes me a contender when it comes to these kinds
of
programs?
Okay. So again, it goes back to, you know, doing research, because government agencies buy products and services at different price points. So it's really about aligning your goods and services with the procurement department's requirements for goods and services. So let's take, for example, the state of New York. The state of New York has a program called discretionary spending. That means that they can spend up to $200,000 with certified minority and women-owned businesses for goods and services. So if you're a very small company, a solo entrepreneur, you kind of want to stay in that space. As you can imagine, you know, the bigger the contracts, the greater the requirements are going to be for infrastructure, financial capacity, and other resources. So what I recommend to clients before, again, going into that vast ocean of trying to get government contracts is to carve out for themselves a picture of what their ideal client would look like. That would include things like, okay, what region can I support? Do I want to stay local? Can I support all of a particular state? Can I support just a particular area? The second thing you want to look at is, what is my financial capacity? Because doing business with the government is different than working with a private client, especially if you're a solo entrepreneur. As a solo entrepreneur, I take a deposit from my private clients before I start working. That's not how it works in the government. You know, in most cases, you have to invoice after providing service for 30 days. And there's a 30-day wait period before you get paid. So it's about you, the business owner, saying to yourself, I'm looking to do business with government agencies. What size of project is going to be a good fit for my company? What do I think I can respectably take on? And then going out into the marketplace and finding those opportunities. And in each of the venues that I mentioned, city, state, federal, and private sector, there are opportunities for very small companies and there are opportunities for very large companies. And you kind of just need to make certain that you're in the right space. I always say to my very small clients, I say, you know, if you're currently making $100,000 right now in your business, you don't want to go for the million-dollar contracts. It's just not a sustainable reach. You want to kind of stay in the $100,000 range until you gain experience, resources, and other tools that you're going to need to start going up and growing in a thoughtful way.
You know, and you touched on something really important that I'd like you to explore a little more, because you talked about your own experience with the security company and all of a sudden, you're adding 100 employees. And government contracts can be a great way for smaller businesses to scale. But as you say, if it's too meteoric, it can be a real problem for the business. So how can businesses sort of do that planning and thinking about scaling and growing and over what kind of time frame?
Yeah. That's so, so important, because I think if you grow too fast in this environment, the potential for failure is tremendous. So one of the first things, again, I recommend strongly is that people should have a formal business plan, because there is the place that you get to really think about, you know, strategic, you know, steps in your business. You know, what do I need? For example, you know, as part of a business plan, you would evaluate, okay, what do I need to get those contracts? What type of cash flow do I need? What type of resources do I need? And what are the risks associated with doing that? So that's the first thing. The second thing is cash flow management, because even on a very small contract, you want to ensure that you have enough cash to sustain your obligations, which include startup costs, payroll, and other, you know, expenses for supplies or travel, whatever the business entails. So you want to make sure that you have a nice reserve to take on the types of business that you're looking for. Another option that I actually think is a great option for small business is to team with other businesses.
Okay.
In other words, be strategic about approaching projects. For example, if you say, okay, my capacity is $100,000 and I really work well in the IT space, you may want to consider teaming with another company, like an HR company that, you know, again, they might have larger resources, more finances. That's another great way for a company, a smaller company, to scale up thoughtfully without taking on tremendous risk.
That's a great point. So in your experience, in addition to, let's say, scaling and growing too quickly, what are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen small businesses make in trying to fulfill government contracts?
Biggest mistakes that I've seen, number one, is not being prepared for the cash situation. Mm-hmm. So the assumption that many people have, which is 100% wrong, is that because I'm certified as a minority, a woman-owned business, I will have additional consideration when it comes to cash. In other words, I'll get paid quicker. The government will work with me to ensure that, you know, payments are going to come in. And that's not how it works. In fact, the government does have some great programs for what they call, the New York City in particular has some great programs for people who are getting government contracts that you can apply for loans with the government. But still, that's a process. So if you're already started the contract, you're way behind if you're thinking that that's when you're going to apply. So that's the biggest mistake that I see people make, not really understanding what the cash flow situation looks like. The second thing, I always say when you're taking on a government client, it's almost like taking on a new partner, because there are a lot of compliance issues that small businesses are, you know, especially if you're always working in the private sector, you may not be aware of. There's all these changing laws, for example, with regard to paid sick leave that's happening around the country. You know, many times small business owners, especially solo entrepreneurs that are operating, may not be aware of all those things. There's prevailing wages, unions, and compliance issues. So that's the second thing, not really having a good understanding of the landscape and the obligations that are associated with doing business with the government. Working with the government is black and white. You need to perform the services, but there's also an administrative component to supporting government contracts that a lot of people miss.
Those are great points. And so you talked about that cash flow thing. And in your experience, how is the government as a payer? I mean, obviously you can't get it in advance, but are they likely to string along a small business for, you know, 4, 6, 8 months? What does that look like?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. I think part of, now, mind you, working with government agencies can be a bureaucracy, but here are some of the things that small business owners can do to, you know, cut down on the risk that are associated with getting paid. Number one, ensuring that your invoices are prepared in the manner that they should be prepared. Because again, it's not like working with a private client. In my private practice, I email an invoice, the client pays it within 10 days. If they don't, then I stop service. In my government practice, that's not how it works. I literally invoice clients on the 30th, and to ensure that I get paid on time, one of the things that I started doing is preparing my invoices on the 15th, making sure that all of the required backup, because sometimes you have to provide, you know, proof that you did the work, sign-in sheets. In the security business, we had to provide something called a certified payroll, verifying that not only did we actually provide the service, but we had to show payroll records to demonstrate that we paid our employees the right wages and benefits. So it's really about having a system in place. And the other thing is to familiarize yourself with the government payment cycles. Lots of government agencies have programs in place to ensure prompt payment to small businesses, but we really need to educate ourselves on what that process is and how can we ensure that we're getting paid on time. It's not uncommon, by the way, to see small businesses, you know, struggling with the payment. So it's one of the first things that we do with our clients is make sure that they understand what they're getting into, that they have the cash reserve to float their contracts, and that they're diligent about the follow-up process and the administrative process about getting paid.
Great. Terrific. And I want to jump back to something that you mentioned earlier, that the opportunities about teaming strategically with other companies. Can you talk a little about how do you find those companies? How do you make sure you're actually working with someone who won't take advantage?
Great.
Who won't steal your intellectual property? I mean, all of those things that happen when you are not solo, but you actually have to trust another entity or another management team.
So timely that we're talking about this, because I'm actually preparing a workshop called The Basics of Subcontracts, and that is exactly some of the things that we talk about in that presentation.
Right.
So the first thing that people need to know is that one of the great benefits of the minority woman and even small business certification is the ability to work on larger contracts, because larger contracts typically have goals for minority and women-owned businesses. Again, using New York State as an example, the goal is 30% on the majority of contracts that are being procured by the state of New York. With the federal government, that starts at 23%, and then local government agencies have all kinds of different requirements. So small business owners kind of need to look at and say, okay, how can I get on some of those larger projects by identifying prime contractors? So a prime contractor is someone that's actively engaged in the process of acquiring these contracts, and they can be identified typically at bid meetings. They can also be identified as plan holders for large projects. What I recommend to clients is that, what I recommend to anyone, is that they interview and meet with prime contractors almost the same way that you would approach dating. In other words, I see people do this all the time. They get into relationships with, you know, contractors that they don't know. It's very, very dangerous. And prime contractors, by the way, will actively look for minority and women-owned businesses who have this certification because they have these goals that they need to meet on their own contracts. In fact, if they don't meet them on some contracts, they can't perform the work and they could potentially not get paid. So they're actively looking for us. And oftentimes I get this email from somebody that says, hey, Jean, I'm working on this project. Would you like to partner with me? And it's a blind email. It's somebody that I don't know. I don't respond to those types of requests. I strategically look for people that I think I have good synergy with and interview those folks, conduct due diligence with those folks, exchange non-disclosure agreements with those folks. And before entering into a subcontracting or teaming relationship, once we agree, you know, okay, I like you, you like me, I think I've done my due diligence on you, you've done your due diligence on me, we want to work together, that's the time to bring in an attorney to outline the terms and conditions of the arrangement, which is very, very important. I can't emphasize the importance of doing that. So you find a good teaming partner, you agree to what you'd like to accomplish, and you make sure that that agreement is memorialized in writing by an attorney. And you negotiate things like pricing, because again, we talked about how sometimes government agencies pay, you know, 60 days in arrears. Small business owners need to negotiate and make sure that they're working closely with their teaming partners so that they know when they're going to get paid in that cycle. Because if you don't do that, there's a good chance now you're, you know, 90 and 100 days out.
Right.
That's really important.
Right, waiting even longer. Wonderful. And what are some of the steps either you've seen your clients do or you've recommended for them in terms of that due diligence?
So
how do they look under the hood so they're not, as I say, blind dating?
Yeah, well, for step one is, you know, the interview, because you can pretty much tell, you know, how people are showing up. So that's the first thing. You're meeting that person in their office or they're meeting you in your office and you're exchanging information. And you can tell a lot in that process, especially, you know, how the information is exchanged. Is it done in a professional manner? So on and so forth. The second thing I recommend is a credit check. There's no point in getting into a relationship with somebody who's going to put your company at further risk, no matter how many resources they have. If they're not paying their bills on time, if they don't have good relationships out in the marketplace, that's a red flag. The third thing I would recommend is interviewing references, in other words, other small businesses that they've worked with in this capacity to see how that relationship went. Last, there's a ton, when you become a government contractor, a lot of information becomes available about your company history, background, payment cycles. So we use a number of websites that are public information to go on and see, you know, what is, if somebody says to me, hey, I'm doing $1 million worth of business with the government, there's a way that I can verify that information. And I suggest everybody do the same. In other words, you want to make sure that the person is creditworthy, that they actually have the infrastructure that they say they have, and that they have the financial resources and the experience and past performance of working with government agencies to be a good partner.
Right. So, Jean, you've given us a lot of really just amazing information, things to be aware of. And really what I'm hearing is that it truly is a process. It's not like you wake up and all of a sudden, boom, tomorrow you're certified and you've got government contracts and the money flows in. It's a situation where you need to be doing research. So that we can maybe end on a slightly happier note, remind us, if you would, why government contracts are so helpful for small businesses and really helping them scale.
So yes, it is a process. And I want to just say to everybody out there that that process is definitely worthwhile. First and foremost, there are a number of free programs throughout almost every, the SBA and a number of different organizations provide resources to small, minority, and women-owned businesses to ready you for some of the things that I talked about, where to find clients, you know, what you need to do, where do you register. So just that's the good news. The second thing is if you're a solo entrepreneur, such as I am, and you're looking for a way to scale up so that you can have more time, you can have contracts that, you know, it's different than the private sector where sometimes you're in an engagement where you're really chasing clients. In the government market space, I now have contracts where I know that those contracts are 5-year terms. So uh-huh. It's really life-changing in that regard because now you can breathe a little bit. You know where your revenue is coming from. You know what you need to do. You know who your client is. It's a very streamlined approach. Once you become successful, you know, bringing on your first contract, you can leverage that contract to bring on others because it gives you the ability to grow in a very thoughtful way. Most of the government contracts that I have experienced, whether it's been in the security company or in the environment that I'm in right now, which is as a consultant, provide resources for overhead, training, and hiring employees, which is very different from how we work in the private sector. So for me, it's a great way to start leveraging growth, and you can do it any way that you want. You can start out really small, saying I'm only going to take on contracts worth $5,000, or I'm only going to look at contracts worth $100, or you can take it to a larger scale if that's something you wanted to do.
Okay, Gene, terrific. Yeah, as I said, the highlights that I'm hearing are, first of all, understanding that it's a process. It's not an immediate magic wand. That also, it really helps you get your own ducks in a row as a business owner in terms of planning and growth and understanding cash flow and cash flow management. And finally, when it comes to partnering there too, understand that that is a process of getting to know people that don't rush through this, that it can be really valuable, but you want to make sure you put the right planning in place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, terrific. Well, Gene, all fabulous, fabulous tips. And thanks so much for being with us today. I took copious notes. I've learned so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening. Remember, go over to businessexponential.com right now and download our 10 steps to a $1 million business. We lay it out for you step by step. The 10 building blocks that'll have you building and growing your business so it's not so dependent on you. Won't that be a relief? Of course it will. So do it right this minute so you don't forget. You'll see it there on top of the homepage. Go to businessexponential.com.